All right, let's call this meeting of the Little Calumet River Basin Development Commission order for Wednesday, March 14th. If everybody would take their cell phones and set them to stun, please. Let's stand up and say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, Ms. Lambert, roll call, please.
Here.
Here.
Present.
Here.
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 Present.
Here. All right, we have a quorum. Let's roll. Approval of the minutes from February 15th, 2018, Talk for Living. Any changes, modifications, motions, what say you?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to approve the minutes from February 15th, 2018.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? Be there none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right, for the records. Next up, Chairman's report. Thank you for attending. The Little Calumet River Basin is a federal flood control project. It's $300 million of man-made engineering. Primarily to make sure something like that never happens again. 2008, we see what happens when man-made structures aren't taken care of and they're maintained. So one of the major concerns and what we want to do is to try to engage the community as a whole to make sure events like that doesn't happen ever again. Now, of course, we have a 10-gallon bucket. If we get 15 gallons of water, we're going to have a problem. But from the standpoint of where we were from September till now of 2008, we're able to at least engage all the other communities to know what would happen if that didn't occur. So every time I look at those, it's a different world because we saw what happened in this last event. That was an issue right there where a lot of folks had their lives changed forever. And we don't ever want to try to see if that happens again. So the goal of this particular group right here is to do flood control as a community as a whole. And that's just one thing that works right in the region. Next up, finance report, approval of the claims for March 2018. Currently, we have $258,414.61. You need a motion?
Mr. Chair, I make a motion that we approve the claims of $258,414.61 for the month of March.
Second.
Motion and second. Any discussion? Paying the bills, folks, what are we talking about? Anything good? Be there none. Mrs. Lambert?
Yes.
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 Yes. All right, moving right along. Project Tracker, I'll roll that in with the Executive Director's Report. Mr. Repe.
So as a part of the Project Tracker, we'll go through most of the projects, or some of the projects as we have them. Most of them are finishing up the design and or in the permit phase of the process, and then an estimated start of when they're going to begin. I'll just go off of my list, or you want me to go off Project Tracker? Which one would you prefer?
Have an executive director's report.
All right, very good. So we'll start with the railroad bridge over Hobart. As you know, we awarded a contract to cut the trees closest to that project in order for us to be in compliance with the state regulation of not disturbing the Indiana bat. That project is ongoing right now. Where we're clearing the area so that in anticipation for that contract to be put out for bid and ultimately awarded to begin, I would imagine sometime in May, so long as we're as long as we have all of our permits. The last permit that I believe we're waiting for is the historical preservation permit from DNR. We submitted some documentation back to them after they had some questions on the authenticity of the overpass, and we anticipate getting that soon, which then we will be able to seek bids for that project. Some projects, we have the Hobart Mitigation Project that you're familiar with, which has gone on for a year. And if I miss anything, I'm sure Natalie from the Army Corps will tell me. Right now, it's a little bit of a slow period. Once things dry out a little bit, the pace of that will pick up. As well as the in-project mitigation, which was awarded but has not started yet because of the soils being a little bit wet. We have some cleanup that we need to do as a part of what occurred about 2 or 3 weeks ago with Hart's Ditch and Deep River, with trees and tree houses and everything else that got washed into the river and washed out with the high levels. So we're going to start cleaning out some of those bridges and culverts now that the water has calmed down a little bit. We're also partnering with Autobahn of Chicago, as well as the Wetland Initiative, on some projects. One of them is off of Klein Avenue, which is used to be called the Davis property, and then there's some property between Martin Luther King and Georgia that we're also looking at working with them on as far as restoration. The Chase Street Pedestrian Bridge, you'll see in the claims, or saw in the claims, that the geotechnical was done. They have the preliminary plans. They'll be submitting those to the Army Corps for their approval, as well as the Clark Street grade elevation change. That will include paving from 29th Street all the way to the railroad as a part of that that change. So once again, those are plans that will be submitted here. Bill will see them and Natalie will see them shortly. I just reviewed them earlier this week. 35th and Chase Bridge was awarded to Dyer. Dyer had the authorization, or got the authorization to begin, and then they're due back to us a schedule as to when they will start the project. Harrison Avenue and Kennedy are still in design, and hopefully we will bid out Harrison earlier this, or later this spring or early summer, which should be a quick turnaround. And then Kennedy Avenue, we still anticipate a bid or an award probably in late summer. So that takes care of the main projects. If there's any other questions that I missed, I'd be happy to answer.
All right, back to the board. Any questions for Mr. Repay on Project Tracker? And for you all out there in Project Tracker, this is basically a list of all the projects that are pending, that we have dollars and in different phases of what's going on. A lot of what we're working on right now is the way this system is set up. If there's an event like we saw in February, there's certain locations that require sandbags and closures to happen. We're spending dollars right now to try to eliminate as many of those that we possibly can. More bang for the buck, if you will. Any questions or anything for Mr. Repay?
When do they anticipate the tree cutting being 100%?
They have to be, their schedule says March 30th. They have to be done by April 1st. There's just no way around that date. And just as another aside, we are adding more gauges as a part of what you guys authorized us last year. The latest gauge that went up was on the Northcott Bridge. They have the Grant Street Bridge, Grant Street gauge to still go up, and that's all in order to help us understand flow and if there's any blockages throughout the system going back into Deep River as well as Hart's Ditch. So that was the latest one that has gone online.
Any other questions? Outstanding. Let's go tech.
We're gonna try.
Not Hammond Tech, just technology.
So we want to hit the lights? We're gonna try this for the first time. There's no clap or horn. Nice. You might all screw this one up.
I think that's for the commission.
Why are you swinging that around?
So everyone can, this one could be swung back the other way. You'll see this one.
Oh, okay.
Work with me here once.
He wants to try to handle that's all.
If that fell off the wall.
It's not level.
It's only 30,000, right?
It's not level.
And if we wait long enough, we can watch the tournament tonight. So what I'm gonna try to attempt to do is give you a timeline or an understanding of what everyone went through with all the communities When February, what was that, 20th happened, 19th happened? And some of you guys have seen this. And so we will start with, what we started with was notifying all the municipalities on Sunday, as well as the Corps, and let them know that the situation was setting up for a not pretty one. The fact that we had 2 feet of snow on the ground, we were expecting several inches of rain, and it was still 30 degrees out. And then it was slowly warmed up. So what we did was we notified all our communities, including NDOT, GLEM, which is our maintenance folks for the pump station, the Army Corps, and then ultimately, I emailed the board at 9 o'clock later on that night when all the models were being consistent. I like this, by the way. It's much better than my PowerPoint.
I agree.
So this is the gauge that everyone usually watches at Holman Avenue in Munster. You will see the flood of record is 17.3. This is the gauge this is what they were anticipating on that Sunday, which was 16.3. It went down just a little bit during Monday, but then they brought it back up to the level of 16.3, which causes concern for a lot of people. People were asking what they could do. They were nervous. So as opposed to just being nervous at home, they took their nervous energy and started filling sandbags at the public works facility in Munster. And those sandbags either made it to all parts of basically the county. I think some of the sandbags actually made it down to Shelby down in Kankakee because they were in need of assistance. Monday night, I came back from an event and I called one of the folks in our group, Chief Timber from Highland. He was awake. I knew he was awake at 10 o'clock because he doesn't go to bed till 2. So I had nervous energy, so I went and hung out with him. We reviewed all the models and the radar and watched all the things that we could, and we decided that it was time to notify the city of Hammond and the town of Munster to start putting up the closure at Northcott Bridge, which is one of our areas that is affected first. I first texted them, but at 12:10 they were asleep, and then we decided to call them. So this is Northcott Bridge, ultimately, what it looked like with all that debris when I said they were coming down and everything was coming down, tree houses, you name it. That was coming down and basically got stuck at the bridge. Hammond contacted Dyer Construction, which ultimately later on, I think Wednesday or Thursday, and they had that removed from the system. So that's another view that you're looking if you're looking to the west. Closure. So after we called Munster and Hammond, we got a call from Griffith in a panic that the blockage at the Katie Marsh was causing the water to back up. The water was about to go over the Katie Marsh. And this is important for us is it also, this Katie Marsh deep tunnel relieves a lot of the tension on Hart's Ditch, which was already seeing a spike. So we were able to get the blockage removed with the help of Gatland at about 3:30. And then, we were able to see some reduction in Hart's Ditch as well as other areas along the system. We contacted WJLB to notify them as a part of our plan to let them know, you know, we were starting to close down roads, which we closed down Northcott, and that we were going to close down others along the system.
And not to interrupt, Dan, but everybody that's new, everything here, it moves west to east. So everything rises and floods first on the west side of the county and moves its way east. That's why everything is happening on the west side. Sorry.
No, that's fine. It gives me a break to talk. Earlier Tuesday morning, we called WLTH, let them know that if they needed us, that we were available. At this point, the water hadn't reached Gary yet, but if in the event that we would, Anita, we would, you know, we were there, here to talk to him. Ultimately, that station with the tower flooded, which caused them to go off the air, which we sort of lost some transmission capabilities over there. And so we're going to work, hopefully, to fix that at a later date. At 9 o'clock later that day, we met with all of our groups that we talked to or we emailed on Sunday. To see what type of needs that they needed. This is all a part of our plan. We opened what they call the Emergency Operations Center. We called NIPSCO and we had the Corps on the phone to to make sure that they were seeing what we were seeing. This is still early on in the event, and we needed to make sure, if you see, you're going to see, I think the gauge station showed was going straight up. One of the helpers for us is the deep tunnel project in Chicago. It doesn't directly help us, but indirectly it does help us by getting water off of Thorn Creek, ultimately helping us. We called MWRD, which is Metropolitan Water Reclamation District. They said their gate was open. They ultimately took in 2.5 billion gallons into their reservoir, which eased some of the issue that we had. But it's one of those things, another tool. We don't have control over them. The Army Corps doesn't have control over them. But we called them, and they said they had it open already Tuesday morning.
You said billion with a B, right?
Billions, okay. 2.5 billion gallons. So at 10:30, we discussed if there was any other pressing matters. We closed down Bernice Road, which is the road between Munster and Lansing. We all agreed to meet at 1:30 that afternoon to give some more time to get out there to figure out what's going on. We also realized that we need some better communication through walkie-talkies, which is something that we're pursuing with the county. At 1:30, it seemed to be that we were going to have to close down Kennedy Avenue. Now, as you said, Mr. Chairman, water flows east and west, so we're slowly expanding our issues. Our issues are starting to expand both ways as far as what places are being affected. And so Kennedy was the next logical place. Ultimately, we are gonna raise Kennedy Avenue, but at this point in time, it was going to get to a point where that was a potential to close. Ultimately, they closed that road at about 12:30 on Wednesday morning. So that was discussed, and Highland and Hammond were in constant contact. There's a great picture of me just because people thought it was funny. We talked to the Chicago media as well as the Times almost probably every other hour to make sure the communication was out there, there were no stories out there that were false or things that were not being said or perceived. Everything was going according to what we had planned, although it was a little bit nerve-wracking. We had a plan and we stuck with it according to what, between us and what the Army Corps have developed for us as far as a maintenance and operation plan. So the next places that we needed to close as it expands its footprint is Chase and Harrison. You heard earlier in my report, those will both be raised. Harrison will be raised. Chase Street will be sort of an overpass in that area, where as opposed to they have the posts and panels there now. So Gary then took it upon themselves as a part of our plan to close down Chase Street at 35th and to close down Harrison Street as it leads into Gilroy Stadium and IUN. And there's your closure on 35th. Harrison was a little bit after the days that wasn't as bad. It had seen better days, but that is roughly what it was to be. So that was their closures. Tuesday night, we received a call. I didn't receive a call. The town of Munster received a call from a resident saying that there was water coming through a wall. I happened to be next to someone from the town of Munster, and I said I would go check it out. At first, I was a little bit skeptical, honestly. And then when we went there and I walked it with the flashlight, there was about 600 feet of wall that was leaking through. So we talked to our partners at the Corps. They said just keep monitoring it. They would send out a team in the morning, and they did, and they gave us instructions on how to fix it. And I really wish this video would work at this point. But if you can see, oh, now I can get to draw, maybe.
Draw.
I'm going to draw, watch. So if you can see, oh, no. I can't draw now. Hold on. Let me hit the...
Oh,
look at that.
Ah,
see?
Oh. Uh-huh. Bigger paper.
I mean, I really wish I had this in high school. Oh, and then here, so if this was actually a video you could see, you would see the water pouring out of that seam and then underneath the wall itself. Now, that wall is decorative, but imagine 600 feet of this. It kept on going. And so ultimately, we dug a trench and... And now I feel like I'm CNN on the magic board here. So that's what they did. They monitored it. We trenched it. We did trench it. Gatlin trenched it. We ended up pumping it over. And I know Bill has some comments about what happened, didn't happen, what he would think to go on in the future. So this is the gauge. So a Tuesday night, finally at 9:30, it crested. As you can see, it was almost just directly vertical for a while, which we were at a point where we didn't know when this was going to end.
That's the gauge that's due south.
That's the gauge that's located just on 30, just almost by the town, by the town hall in Dyer.
For the people in the audience, who may want
to. Oh, sorry.
Water is moving from the south to the north. It's cresting in the south, and we know that we're going to have major events in the north when we see gauges go high.
This is an aerial. Dyer put up a drone up in the air, and they took a picture. Aerial. This is 213th in Dyer. There's a church here on the right side, right corner. And then this is considerable time after the event, so it doesn't really give you everything that it could have been, but an idea. This is looking from Wicker Park to Hawthorne. I believe that is Wednesday morning. So you see how high you're talking. You're talking about 2.5 feet before it sort of goes over the top, roughly.
Gauge in the middle, right?
Yeah, that's the USGS gauge at Munster. So that hit 10 point something or 11 something. Was it 11? 11 something at that point. And then Bill will talk about more about that. This is as you're looking down on Kennedy Avenue, from the west looking to the east. And I'm going to draw again. So the closures are here in Highland and here in Hammond. And you can see this was on Thursday afternoon or Friday morning. We took this drone just because we could get it up, but the water was actually up to just below the deck. So that becomes a critical state for us when we have to close this down. That's also a part of the plan for us, is that I think it's 14.5. I'm gonna go to phone a friend here. Yeah, so at 14.5, that's when we close this down to protect the road, because you don't want this running up against.
Can you go back to that picture? I just wanted to highlight a reference point.
You're tempting me here.
Going backwards?
Yeah.
Yeah. Lower left, just off the screen, is yes. Wendy's and then Cracker Barrel for reference for folks who might know.
Yeah. Lower left is the right. New hotels are upper left. The upper right is where that dome is Highland Public Works.
And Dan, you mentioned that the bridge will eventually be raised to the height of at or near the pedestrian bridge that's just to the east, correct?
That's correct. The way it's designed now is there will be no closure. I'm going to draw again. Is you see the wall here, that's a part of the levee, and that's a part of the levee. So we filled in the gap. So ultimately, when this is all done, that will be as high as that levee wall. So there will be no closure needed. So you will be able to drive over it, transportation will be working, and people will be able to get on their way. You know, a lot of people said, well, why did you have to close? Did we spend all this money fixing this? And that's just a part of it. The way this was designed was it wasn't designed for all the roads to be raised. That would have added the cost. So now what we're doing now is fixing it and making sure that our plan works with the Army Corps.
And Dan, when we finish raising this bridge and Harrison Street and what's the other one?
35th, yep.
You might want to tell the public how many sandbags we're going to...
Oh. Well, for 35th and Chase, we won't have to put up that panel and post, which is a very time-consuming, tedious, because of all the small parts that are involved and the screws and the bolts that need to be put in there. The sandbags at I'm going to have to phone more friends. The sandbags at Harrison, I'm guessing 3,500, but I won't put them on the spot. It's roughly that many. You'll see a picture of what we did on Georgia here later on in this program that will help show that as well. This picture on your left is a picture from the pedestrian bridge looking to the west on how high it was, Kennedy Avenue still, and then on the bottom right are pictures of you looking to the west as to how much the water. Now you see the water as it relates to how high it is on the wall isn't that high. Our main concern at that point in time, was simply Hart's Ditch and how much water it could get out to these places. It was constricted. We couldn't get it out to the areas that we have some storage capabilities. Wish this was a video. This is the excavator that was used by Gatlin to take out the debris in Katie Marsh. That's another picture of how much debris was coming down the Katie Marsh. It was so thick that you just couldn't get to it. And the trash rack was not operable at that time. This is the Bricky Bowl, if you're familiar, anyone in Hobart, that had filled up. That's actually an offshoot of Duck Creek, something that we're working to fix as well as a part of that railroad bridge. And then Wednesday happens, and now I say, here comes our bigger footprint. So we're still battling Kennedy, we're still battling Northcott, we still have Bernice Road. We have some other issues. We have a leaky wall. Now we add into it, Georgia and Martin Luther King both need to be shut down. Georgia is designed to overtop, and you'll be a picture later on for that. And Martin Luther King was overtopping north of 94. So we had to close down both of those north-south thoroughfares. And this is some of the pictures. The one, your top left, is a picture from Georgia Street looking to the west. The top right is Georgia looking to the east. And then the one here on the bottom, I believe, is Georgia as well, looking a little bit further back, closer to the expressway, is how much water it's taking in as far as building up. And the more buildup we had, the more opportunities there were for some backflow from the riverside to the land side, which we ultimately had to deal with and close down some of these. We had to close down some of these gates. To your left is the WLTH tower. To your right, believe it or not, are the four culverts that run underneath the railroad track that I have pictures later on that show you what they used to look like in 08. It's not as bad as what it looks. That's just like straw or grassy stuff. It was still working its way underneath. There was no blockage, but these are things that we constantly monitor to make sure that there was nothing blocking the system so we could keep on making sure the system worked. Just how high it was getting in other places, even though some folks believe it was not a major rain event. This is an area off of Columbia Avenue. This is just to depict, we did have a lot of space within the river during the event. This was taken off of Columbia Avenue looking to the west. Munster's in the foreground, so we did have capacity in that area. This is looking off Columbia Avenue looking to its east. Sorry for all the great pictures. And this is Columbia Avenue. If you see that silver line there, that is the water line that runs from Hammond to Munster. So there was debris and such kicking it up against that, but we never had to close down Columbia. In past years, Columbia and Northcott were a closure at the same time because of elevation. We raised Columbia Avenue, and Columbia Avenue didn't need to be closed, and that's what we hope to do throughout the system. This is the backyards of Southmore, just so that you have an idea. Never went into the backyards. Still more. And so then, we got into, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday, this is Wednesday night, where we start getting a lot of calls about water coming from riverside to landside. We have gate structures, and usually the primary is the flap gate or a duck bill, and if it's to flow out, it flows out. If it doesn't flow out and starts backflowing, someone's pop can gets in the way, a stick gets in the way, the river starts to come backwards, comes into the land. So we have to close down some gates at Georgia. I closed down the one at Marshalltown at our pump station. And like I said, now our footprint is now even expanding. So now we're at from Martin Luther King all the way to Bernice Road, and this is going on for a couple days now. There's our pump station to the left on Marshalltown, and that's when you have the water coming back from the river, where that electrical source is supposed to be dry. So that was a not fun situation, but we were able to close down the gate, the pumps were pumping it, and we kept that area relatively dry. This is the storage area between Clark Street, which is meant to fill in. And now here's, I get to draw again. So here's one of the things that we did on Georgia Street. You see, no, this is, oh, this it's mislabeled. It's supposed to be Georgia. I apologize. So when we did this, Georgia is supposed to flow over under high events. In past years, we had to sandbag this area. I am, from perspective-wise, I'm taking a picture looking south off the bridge, off a 94 bridge, looking south on, don't mind what it says, Clark, it's supposed to be Georgia. We raised the elevation of this road. We couldn't raise it the entire way, but we raised it here so that no sandbags would be needed. No human intervention would be needed, and it would contain itself within it. So what we did was we had some barricades back here to stop people from coming through, but yet it saved the city of Gary from having to throw sandbags for another closure, and that would have been another four or 5,000 sandbags. So this is how it worked, how we thought it should, and how it was designed to work.
That's raised like just north of what, 33rd? I think those are turned off to
33rd is back there. 33rd is up here.
Yep, okay. So it's north of 33rd.
Correct.
So, okay.
Now, this is another project that we did. We raised the manholes, and we encapsulated them in those containers, and we vented them with what you see is that almost like shepherd's stick that's sticking out of it. This is the one off of Chase Street in the drainage area between the levee and the road. This is one that's completely submerged in off of Broadway right by IUN. Now see if I can get this to play. Wouldn't it be fun? I don't know if it will play. All right, well, if it did play, and I have an advanced knowledge, but that's if you see that little vortex there, that is the water actually going into a manhole that had tipped over, and this is why we did what we did. Otherwise, this would have taken on and put immense pressure on the Gary Sanitary District, may have shut down their station, but also could have penetrated underneath the levee and flooded people without even us knowing it. So,
what year was that, Dan?
This was when I first started, so 2011, when this one happened, and this was just off of Chase Street. The reason why we knew this one was I got a phone call from Dan Vicari saying, hey, look, we've got a bunch of fish in our screen at the pump station at Chase Street. What is going on? And it was actually a sunny day, if you believe it. And I said, I don't know. So we looked everywhere, and we found this manhole had tipped over. We had a rain event about 3 days before. But this manhole had tipped over from pressure and was taking in all the water from the river. So basically the river was going into that manhole, going to their pump station, and they were treating it. They were dealing with it. And so they were running at 100% capacity on a sunny day. So we eventually figured out a way to stop the flow into the manhole, and then ultimately a long-term solution was what we did, and that was build these, or actually the better few here, and that's actually, I think, the same manhole, and that's completely encapsulated so that there is no ability to tip over, and then it vents when we have that issue. Yeah.
Also, in the 2008 flood, a lot of the flooding in Gary, near IU campus, was due to this kind of situation where The manhole cover's been blown off because of the pressurization from the flooding that went towards the river, and then when they were opened and the river came up, it backfilled through the system and flooded out areas behind the levee. So that's why this was necessary.
Actually, and Bill says he has a picture of it, but there's an aerial picture, I think you said, of the water backflowing so much that in Gleason Park you see like a fountain coming up. That's how much it was coming through in 08. But so we worked with the Corps to get this, you know, to get that approved and to fix it. So more storage, not to bore you. Clark and Colfax, this is just our normal patrols to make sure things aren't blocked up, make sure things are flowing. If they're not flowing, we need to make sure we can get someone. That the top left is Colfax, the bottom right is on Clark Street Bridge looking to the east. Get myself confused. There's Oliver. I promised him I'd get him in the picture. Oliver works for GLEM, and he takes care of our pump stations. And this is the picture off of our pump station on Grant East looking to Grant Street. There you see in the background and how high that water was against the wall. Not yet threatening Grant Street itself, but something in the future. Oliver's going to hate me for putting him in this, but I told him if I have to be in it, he's in it. So there's our other Grant Street pump station. Right now, it was just at that point, it was just working off its sump pump, so it was working in fine shape. We didn't need a larger thing. This is the under of Broadway, so that you have an idea how small that water it has to go through. And then this is starting to get into Lake Station off the dam. If you look at the tree, I got there a little bit. Well, these pictures are from there. I was there initially when it was flooding, but you see the watermark on the tree on how high it really was at some point. And then this is Bellaboo off of Colorado. And then the left picture is the one that used to be the former trailer park in Lake Station, and the right is looking at the I-65 expressway right about Central Avenue. So on Thursday, we're still going through that. That was just a little respite of pictures. Thursday, during our monitoring, we start to see water fill up at the IUN parking lot, that little auxiliary parking lot on the far, what is that, the north part of campus. So we determined and we found that there was a gate that was backflowing there as well, so we had to shut that one down to make sure that, you know, IUN wasn't impacted. Ultimately, Saturday, we went out, water started to recede, we took down the barricades, Martin Luther King was opened, and then what I told you about those four culverts in 2008, what they look like, this was a picture from the inspection report from the Army Corps did in September. This will be a picture I tell people I'll never probably leave out of a presentation. But this is what it looked like in August of that year when they did the inspection, and then this is what it's supposed to look like. Now, that certainly wasn't how it looked like in February, but that's how they have been open. And so far, besides that little weir that you see in the bottom of the screen that we're looking to address through DNR and our partnership with Audubon and Wetland Initiative, which they believe they can cultivate some good plantings back in that project, that's really what it's supposed to look like. So I'm happy that I got through the presentation. If all you guys that have been here for a lot of presentations, I haven't failed this one. So I was happy, and next time I do one, I'll feel a little bit more comfortable. So
well done. Anybody have any questions for Mr. Repay as it relates to what happened last month?
C plus.
Well, let's give him a hand, first of all.
Tough grader. And I'm just going to say this, there's no applause. You know, the folks from, you know, Hammond, Munster, Griffith, Highland, Gary, all did what they were supposed to. NDOT did what they were supposed to do. So I don't think anyone feels like applause, because it's just a matter of time before the next one happens. We just have to keep on going with our plan. And hopefully that 15 pounds or 15 gallons of water doesn't hit our 10-gallon bucket. So
I'd like to make a point of what Dan said. I had a chance to go out there and take a look firsthand. The first thing I did of what's going on. And I was really impressed with the first responders, the police and the fire, from all of the municipalities working together. I've actually seen people being evacuated by boat, and that was a really sorrowful sight to see in Lake Station. I mean, that river is really terrible. And I also was impressed with, I think, NIPSCO. I think they shut off gas and electric for anybody to not get hurt or have any fatalities.
There were a lot of people. Lake Station Fire, police, right. NIPSCO. I want to mention Bill and Natalie, I was on the phone with, and right. Bob from the Army Corps. They had their office up and running, and any resources we needed, you know, any expertise that they had, you know, because as you saw, the footprint of this situation kept on getting wider and wider, and our resources were getting spread thinner and thinner. And, you know, you have multiple, then you also, I didn't put in there the phone call from the county seeking assistance, because now Kankakee River and Shelby and all those issues are down there, and they're going above the 2008 level. So they're all, I mean, this could go on forever. We're going to put a lot of videos, a lot of aerial videos that were taken of it. So if you ever want to look at it, it will be available to you. So,
where are they available, Dan?
They will be available at our littlecametriverbasin.org. And you will see it. It should be under documents. And if it isn't, it will be by tomorrow, right, Roman? Is Roman here?
Okay. Roman, any other questions for Dan?
Not a question, just another comment. Just maybe not really for Dan, just for the public to know that, you know, you design things with certain design conditions, and, you know, you do the best you can as engineers. The Corps are the engineers who design the project, but I don't think one of the design conditions would have been 2 feet of snow and then, you know, 3 inches of rain and one day after that. So, and with climate change that's occurring, you know, we met last week after the event to talk about what happened, how did it compare to September 2008, what went right with all the communities, what we could have done better. And that's what we will continue to commit to doing, is, you know, just trying to do better, to, because at the end of the day, no, we don't want to see anybody flood. And so, you know, we just try to do the best that we can to, you know, either pull people out of situations that are prone to flooding, or, you know, build up the protection where we can. So that's it, Mr. Chairman.
Anybody else? All right, moving right along. Thank you, Dan. Next up is our federal partners from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Folks, you want to go through and help us with some of the things going on from your perspective?
Sure. Good evening. Natalie Mills with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Thank you for having us. I just want to echo what Dan indicated, that the system worked well, and the community has really stepped up, and I'm just excited at this presentation and to see how the system actually performed. To piggyback off Dan, I'm going to bring Bill Rochford, who's our levee safety officer. He's just going to talk about the system. I think he has one slide. I'm just going to, there were questions that were presented to us that we'd like to address at this time. So I'd like to turn the mic over to Bill.
Thank you.
He was practicing while I was in the meeting.
Hello, everyone. My name is Bill Rochford. I'm with the Corps of Engineers in Chicago District. My role is the district's levee safety program manager. I take care of doing all the managing the inspections of all the levees, making sure they're being taken care of, working with Dan on any kind of adjustments or revisions or corrections that need to be done, and making sure the levee is performing as it needs to during a flood event. I was in our emergency operations center during this flood event, and we were coordinating with the commission, having teams out here, checking things out, and addressing any questions that were coming up during the event. So I'm here right now to respond to some questions that were posed to the Corps, and just to see if there's any further discussions or questions that the council would like to have for us. First question was raised as, we would like a general overview of why the water stacks up in stores in Gary, the roads need to be closed longer, and the pressure on the Gary levee system lasts longer in Gary. So we'll explain a little about this project on the way it's intended to function. As we mentioned, the river will flow on Hart Ditch, and that's what I'm showing this map on here, Phil. So Hart Ditch, so here's a map of the project area here. What's shown here is the levees along the river in the hard colors, and then what's shaded area is what could potentially flood during a major flood event if it goes over the top of the levee and really inundates the area behind it. So you show the impact areas and what's protected by the levee. So here's a Hart Ditch flows in from the south into the locale, and then it splits actually at that location and flows up to Illinois and also out to Michigan
through Gary on the east side. And then this is hard pitch, and the that tunnel, as mentioned earlier, where there was a blockage, is on Katie Marsh Ditch on Arbogast Avenue, and it flows from Katie Marsh into Little Cal River in the town of Griffith. So that's the water coming into Little Cal, and then it flows both ways. It's the river here in the west end is very narrow, and as it goes towards Illinois and towards Gary, once it moves towards Gary to the east, the levees are called setback from the river. That allows the river to spread out a little bit more and to use the storage and the floodplain that's in that area. This project was built when there was old levees in the Highland, Munster, and Hammond areas. Gary at that time, before this project, did not have any levees at all. To allow this project to proceed forward, we were going to be constraining the river, and so there was going to be potential for raising the river because of our holding everything back. To have this body go forward, we had to find a way to make sure that those impacts for raising the river didn't extend beyond the limits of this project. And so we couldn't force more water into Illinois or cause flooding that happened in Illinois that'd be worse, or further east towards Lake Station and out to Lake Michigan on the east side. So with that, the Gary area is basically the big sponge for the flooding that might occur. So it's intended to fill up and then slowly drain out through the Gary area. So that is the reason for why it seems like water stays longer in the Gary section. It is basically a former marsh, and is it still intended to function in that way. And it'll take water in faster, but it lets it out a little bit slower. So the excess gets stored in Gary.
Well, how long, I'm just curious, but how long does it store it in Gary, which causes this problem?
It really depends on how much water comes in and how fast it goes out, because on the downstream end is deep river. If the deep river is flowing heavily, water can't leave that portion of Gary. So if water is still coming in the hard ditch, it's going to start filling up the bladder here, and depends on how fast it can drain out going towards Lake Michigan.
Well, is there a recommendation as far as how they alleviate that problem so Gary doesn't have that problem, or Lake Station anymore?
Lake Station is outside the project limits, and the project itself is designed such as not increasing flooding conditions that are being experienced in Lake Station. So it's not exacerbating their current flooding situation. That's why this area here has to function where it's holding that water in. Now, Dan was mentioning that one culvert was blocked, and that's right over here on this railroad structure here, on the east end of the project. That blockage caused a lot of this flooding in the Gary area to be much higher than originally intended. Now, that with the levees in place, that did not cause any problem overtopping. It's certainly a concern, but it saved other areas from being flooded.
What, Bill, where was that railroad you referred to?
It's over here. It's called Northwark, Norfolk and Southern. It's right by Martin Luther King Drive.
That's
the north of the. So in 2008 was when that railroad culvert was blocked. Right. And that's when Dan showed us being cleared out. Okay, any other questions regarding the flooding in Gary?
Just as some clarification, you know, I think it's not always understood that some roads are designed to be closed. Can you speak to that point? Is that the case or is that not the case?
Okay, roads that cross the levee system are either designed to be high enough, or if they're not high enough, there is a closure required, so the levee system itself the water can't come through that location and flood out the area beyond the levee. So not all spots, and then because of funding situation when the project was being developed, road raises are rather expensive, as you're fully aware, and that wasn't within the federal budget or within the project funds available to perform that work. So the cost-effective solution was just to install a closure system. It was certainly impacts of transportation, but it would allow the project to proceed forward because of the benefit cost that goes with it.
I got one more question.
Yes.
Recently I was with the mayor of Lake Station and other representatives from the city of Gary. And the question is that there's a levee that's basically needed in that area. And I'm just curious to know, how long would it take between the Army Corps of Engineers and our organization here to put a levee in that area to alleviate that flooding in Martin Luther King Drive, Georgia Street, and Lake Station?
OK,
The Corps does have a program that the commission can work with us on to consider levies in that spot. And so that's most likely, we have an authority called Section 205 under the Flood Control Act. And that's so that's something that could be considered as a project going forward in time.
But when? How long would it take? I'm just curious to know.
It took this one 30 years.
So
hopefully a lot less.
We don't have any project right now that's going right now. So if the commission is wanting to engage with the Corps and talk about that, then we certainly are available to do so. But I can't give you a timeline on how long it would take to move forward.
We're going to do that one independently.
Okay. I'd just like to be able to tell the people in Lake Station when they expect that they can go back and live in their homes again. That's all. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Moving on. So the next question we were given is, what are the next steps for us to do with respect to dealing with 600 feet of wall in Munster that was leaking during the rain event? So Dan was mentioning that earlier. That location of that leakage was, I think, in this stretch over here on the east end of, or the west end of Munster. The leakage that was observed, certainly more than was expected from our design, and it's something we are going to be following up with. Then today, the Corps issued a 30-day notice to all our levy sponsors to inspect and identify any kind of performance issues or damage from the flooding, recent flooding event. And so Dan has a copy of that letter. We have this right here. And so what we need is a formal response from our sponsor to say we feel that this portion did not perform adequately, and that will let us proceed with getting funding to further evaluate this.
Bill, how does that funding process work? I mean, how does that work?
You mentioned our inspections, and that there's some a program called PL 8499. That's Public Law 8499, and it's essentially an insurance policy that if this project is maintained and operated according to the operation maintenance manual that was provided, that policy is in effect. And so if there is damages, the insurance policy will kick in to address any damages from a flooding event.
And what's the timing usually? How long does it take to, I mean, assuming Dan gets you the paperwork in the appropriate time, right, then you guys do something with it, and it probably goes to some federal insurance agency or something.
The Corps will provide the funding. We will work with our division office to do an investigation, verify the conditions and the facts that related to why it wasn't performing or the damage that occurred. We will have to produce a report, and based on the findings of that report, go forward with the repairs, and it'll be 100% federal cost to do the repairs.
Who does the inspection? You?
It'll be the Chicago office, yes.
Okay, because I'm thinking, you know, given the 30-day timeline, by the time you do the inspection, it could be 2 to 3 months after the event.
The 30-day notice is for the sponsor to notify us that there was a performance issue.
Right, but then you have to come out and do an inspection, I think I heard you just say, after that. So now we're 2 to 3 months after the event. Are you going to inspect conditions that may have changed since? I mean, how do we know that we're going to get credit for being in good shape at the time of the event?
That's part of the report that we have to produce for our division office, and we do have the documentation. We have the photographs that were provided associated, so we have captured the essentials of the issue in mind.
Okay, roger that. Okay, I'm good. Okay.
When was the last model you guys did? What year was that? When you guys designed this, what was that based on?
Okay, I'm not fully up to speed on all the hydraulic modelings. There's been several different iterations. There was a pre-project model, and then it was used then to say what the project, what kind of impacts the project will have on the river stages. There have been some adjustments to it over the years, but this was the modeling that was done to authorize the project and to produce the levee system that we have here. And that was authorized back in 1986. And it's been updated so much since then, but the essence of it is still in effect. Okay. So next question then. There was a lot of pressure on Hart Ditch, which exceeded its historic high watermark, yet no water overtopped in the Wicker Park or the Rookery. Is modeling available? So the question is referring to overtopping areas There's an overtopping location in Wicker Park at the golf course. That's in the Highland side of the, on the river of Harditch. And then there's a rookery over near Klein Avenue. And I checked the river gauges, and the and then it kind of shown on this this map right here. First, talking about the rookery. The rookery elevation is about elevation 16 on the Kennedy River gauge. The river at that location only got to like 15 and a half. So it was not, so that rookery is intended to, once the river in that area is kind of like going over a 100-year event, it starts using that rookery then as a storage area for letting the river breathe and expand outward. Kind of like the way it's mentioning about what's over in Gary. Okay. Now the golf course has a design overflow, and that is intended to, once the river, the capacity of the levee system is exceeded, where there's too much water, that's that 15 gallons in a 10-gallon bucket, it's gonna start overtopping. We designed this project where there's identified areas where we want it to overtop before anywhere else. And the Griffith Golf, and the golf course is one of those locations. So we'll overtop at that spot before anywhere else to minimize any kind of damages to structures and people. So it was well below that spot.
What is that level?
Excuse me?
What is that level that, at the golf course?
The golf course, the elevation there is about, what is the number here, 18 on the Indianapolis gauge. So that's when it starts overtopping into that little area there.
And what did we reach, do you know?
What was that?
What did we reach at this last event?
I have that information. It's about 14 and a half, I think, in Indianapolis.
Okay.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you.
Not to be here.
What was that?
So you're indicating that there was 3.5 foot before it would overtop into Griffith?
Highland.
I mean, into Wicker Park.
Highland.
Into Wicker Park.
Yes.
But there wasn't 3.5 foot of freeboard on the wall in Munster.
No, there was about 2.5 feet of, at the Munster wall. So the river doesn't flow flat for it to. So with this, what's the best way of showing this? How do I play with the tool here? Okay, what I'm doing, I'm zooming in on the river, on the South River. So what's you're seeing here? Oops, come back here. Okay, so this is the water level coming out of Harditch. So you can see how it's peaked up. Okay, then it comes out. So once it leaves Harditch, it has room to spread out. And so that's why Harditch responds very, very fast. But it can't stay up that level because it'll come out into the main channel of the Lillicale River. Okay, so Harditch, we did check, and it was about, it was 2.5 feet of freeboard before overtopping would have happened there. So, but it's, but it won't, but it can't really sustain itself up there. I mean, it's flowing out through the Lillicale River. So,
sir, there's yes, definitely hold on,
hold on. Questions now, excuse me, hold on, finish please.
Okay, so there, like I said, there was still 2.5 feet of freeboard remaining on the flood wall and on the Munster side of the Harditch.
Wouldn't it overtop on the Hawthorne side onto the street first before it hit Wicker?
Well, we work by H&H, but that is the purpose of that overflow section in the Highland side. I'll re-verify with them, but it certainly was a major event, and it might be one of those lessons learned we have to go back and revisit, and I'll work with our hydraulics group to see if that's something that changed the impression of how this worked. But everything here, like I said, it stayed within the channel. The project performed the way it was intended to. And I want to give credit to all the responders to your deal with that.
No issue there. We just have this little sketch from Dan. I assume you've shared it with Bill, but it looks like the wall on the.
So, I mean, Bill, you know that area and that part of the community suffered significant damage in 2008. So this was a little worrisome, especially if they think that wall is going to overtop before the big, huge park and golf course takes on any water. So that tends to be the concern.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I understand, yes. 10 years this year, so I understand that.
10 years? So, I mean, based on that statement, the question still remains. So your explanation is that, you know, there was still capacity, but if it did get to be higher, it would go into Wicker Park, not just at Harditch, but elsewhere? I mean, where would that top over to get into Wicker Park if it in fact went over what was originally designed for that area of the system?
Going to the Wicker Park golf course, just around the bend on the Locale River. So that's where the low part of that levee is at. So just immediately downstream of that section.
Thank you.
There's also another overflow into the Cabela's area, right across the river from there.
Thank you. Is there more?
Okay, let me see. The next question I have then, it appears as though the Hart Ditch levee on the Wicker Park side is higher than the Hawthorne Drive side. Please provide an explanation. So yes, the what we have is two different types of flood protection systems here. We have a concrete flood wall along the Muster side, and then we also have earth embankment levees. Now the flood wall is designed right at the design elevation of for the flooding event. The levees, which are the earth embankment part, have what's called overbuild to address for a potential settlement following construction, and also 6 inches of topsoil. We don't want to have topsoil as part of providing our protection. And so what it will look like is that the levee part of it is a foot higher effectively than the flood wall portion of it. Now we don't want water going over the embankment part. We prefer having it going over a hard structure such as a flood wall. So that's preferred in the event that it is going to overtop.
Wait. So you just said that you would prefer to go over the wall versus the earthen levee?
If I had to make a choice.
Well, all the houses are on the other side of the wall. The golf course is on the earthen levee.
That's why we put a lower part over to the golf course.
Okay.
So that is where it's intended to go. But once that starts spilling over.
I don't think 10 foot. That wall.
Mrs. Whitaker, I got it. All right. So it's just further down than at the wall that everybody stands and looks at. Mm-hmm. That's where it's supposed to top over. So it's supposed to go over further north down the Hart Ditch towards the fifth hole. I don't know how else to describe it. Yes. Right by the high velocity channel.
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Last question I had here is based on our field team observations of the event, is there something the commission or the communities could have done better in their opinion? Want to give credit to everybody doing a great job. The levee certainly provided a lot of protection to the communities in here. This, at least on Hart Ditch in this area on the west end of the project, it was as high as it likely was in the 2008 event. So just from that experience, it provided a lot of the flooding damages. So beyond that, I would say, I mean, just when the flood happens, that's when the communities or particularly the public works officials need to go make sure they're checking the levees. And as they did, they talked through about when it's necessary to put the closures in, and that is all according to the flood plan that was in place. So.
Yes, sir.
All right.
That all those questions?
That's all I have.
All right. Anything else for Bill?
No. I just wanted to ask one point to Derek had mentioned, and I'm not sure you answered exactly what he was looking for. There are roads in Gary that are designed to flood during the event. That true statement?
There are roads that go between the levees and Gary, and those will flood. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Colonel, you have anything to say?
Hey, I'm just really happy to be here. I know last time I was here back in August, it's good to be here to see how this project performed. There's some things we want to work on. We got the notes, and we'll definitely take those things back and make sure we respond to some of these needs immediately.
Thank you, sir. All right, moving right along. Next up,
Project.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry, I just had a few things to update you guys on. Typical things that I would normally update you. First of all, I just want to address the Lomar. I have checked in with a previous consultant to see where we are. Yesterday they indicated that the LOMAR is to be issued within the next 45 to 60 days. However, it won't be effective until after an appeal and a publication period. So I did ask them for clarification. I said, so what does that mean? Does that mean it's September? Because is it 120 days from the 60 days? So I've asked for clarification. I'm not quite sure yet. Once they respond to me, I can let Dan know and he can pass it on
So we still don't know when those folks along State Line in Hammond are going to be able to get relief from having to pay mandatory flood insurance?
No, I do not know, but certainly we're well on our way. They're done with their technical review, which is good. We've addressed all their concerns, so I think the next step is just their process.
So to be issued means, I mean, everything looks good, it's
correct.
Just following the
right.
process.
Right, so it sounds like they have two public comment periods, so that has to occur before they can actually, you know, do review.
What public, who are they advertising? Where are they advertising? Do you know?
I don't know.
Okay. Wall Street Journal? And what the heck?
To the people that are ready, do they still have to pay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I believe that they should pay until, you know, it's finalized.
Sounds like it's paperwork to me.
Correct. Certainly in a better position than we were a year ago.
Kind of feels like the same position.
And to just go over the contracts quickly, you have the construction progress reports for both Hobart and In Project Mitigation. As Dan indicated, they haven't began work at the In Project Mitigation site yet. They're scheduled to begin a mobilization next week. They wanted to start with some removal of trees and shrubs at that time. Hobart, they're continuing to do ongoing site clearing, they're doing some fencing work and seeding. They're just continuing to make good progress. Derek, do you want to speak to the meeting? Were you at the meeting?
There's a meeting in the city of Hobart on March the 1st. I believe the Army Corps of Engineers presented as well as I. I believe it was a successful meeting. I appreciated the opportunity to be there.
No more change orders this time, okay.
No, I believe they're just going to be, you know, they've cleared the footprint, the 300 plus acres. Mm-hmm. So now they've had an opportunity to evaluate the whole site. So
they're slamming it. Yeah.
Yeah. They're making good progress. That's all I have.
Thank you, ma'am. Any other questions for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers? Be there none?
Thank you.
Thank you. Moving right along. Next up is other issues, new business.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we authorize the Executive Director to open bids for periodic levee mowing and award to the lowest and most responsive bidder pending review by attorney and staff.
I second that.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? Dan, we're supposed to mow it too?
That's correct. So every 2 years we put this out for bid, and 20 some miles of levee. They have to mow it from 15 feet from the toe on both sides. So.
Okay.
I'm opening.
You're opening.
So the first one is from C&H Mowing. Total price per cycle is $23,300. Just as a side, we usually do four to five cycles depending on how it grows. Officially, I'm just looking at it, $20,400 for this cycle. So unofficially, one is the one for finer finish grounds care is $20,400, and the one for C&H mowing is $23,300. So unofficially, that's what it is, but we'll review it with our attorney to make sure that they've got everything that they need. So,
okay, taking care of business. Any questions on that one? All right, moving right along. My favorite part, statements of the board from the floor. 3 minutes, folks, come up, help us make sure things like that in 2008 don't happen again. State your name and address, and what say you? Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name's Barbara Whitaker, 1921 Alta Vista, Munster, Indiana. I live right at the intersection of Alta Vista and Hawthorne. I watch that thing every day. I lived here in 2008 when that happened. And of course, I'm still living here. We lived through all the construction. It's sort of like common knowledge that the cement wall on the golf course side is higher than the cement wall on the residential side of Hart Ditch. And I didn't go out and measure it, but you could tell that the where the water was on our side and how much further it had to go on the other side. So the rumors going around is that that was built deliberately like that because it was supposedly going to settle. The concrete wall on the wicker side was going to settle. Well, I don't think it settled. And I think that water, if this happens again, is definitely going to come into the houses. Furthermore, one more thing about the sandbagging. Okay, all this commotion was outside of my house all night, and there's sandbagging, and there's fire trucks, and it was like a three-ring circus. Before the morning, that water hadn't touched those sandbags, but good sections of them had just fallen off. It was a total waste of money, in my opinion, to try that sandbagging on the top of that wall. Well, I was glad tonight to hear that there's going to be fixing it. So I'd like to know what the Army Corps is going to do about fixing the wall on our side so that it's not lower than the wall on the other side. That's it.
Thank you. Clicking.
What was that?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello. Laura Zalno, 7142 Forest in Hammond. February's rain event was quite a test of our system. It was a bigger test than any of the planned closures or the tabletop exercises that we could ever do. I don't think anybody can dispute that. And while the detention pond at the state line did not overtop and therefore we did not test the tieback along state line, I do have some questions now that we've kind of seen it work. One of the questions is the stop logs that are in place for the closures, do they not have to be reinforced somehow, visqueen sandbags, or are those stop logs waterproof? Any answer? Dan?
I mean, they're designed to be waterproof, yes. So they're anchored down and compression, so water, the squeezing of the blocks together, if necessary, they can be reinforced with plastic.
So, again, my neighbors, we were thinking of Starbucks over on the old Panera site there. A lot of people were up there that weekend. Met a lot of neighbors up there. So we don't have to worry. They don't have to come out and do anything. Those stop logs are sufficient. Should we have a flood event? Or are we looking, should we be expecting visqueen and sandbags?
The only thing that Hammond has to do on state line is continue the wall as it goes to the north from where it stops, where the wall stops. They need to tie it into higher ground. But if that's, you're talking 1 foot high sandbag, and Hammond was aware of that, because we were monitoring the overflow, because we know at 597 it goes over the top and starts filling the detention.
Okay, I guess that's my next question, is what's the trigger then in gauge feet?
I don't have it right now, but I will email you as gauge feet. But 597 at the gauge at Southmore, so that gauge is the datum is 580.72, and why I remember that. So when it was at 16 feet, it was at 596.73. So it start. That's why you start seeing the water come in to that detention area.
Well, it did come in, and it did get quite high.
Oh, yeah.
And again, while it did not overtop, I did see Calumet City come out and look once while I was out there.
Did you see me?
I did not see you.
I was there.
I
have pictures.
I was there. I was at Homan Avenue. I was at Klein. I was at Kennedy. I was at Northcott. I stopped and chatted with the girl from WGN, told her, it's all right, just go down River Road there. It says road closed. Go past it. Don't worry. Seriously, she was trying to find Northcutt. She was afraid to go past the road closed sign. Road closed sign, I just came from there. No worries. She wanted to know if I worked for the city. Apparently, a raincoat, yellow raincoat and a yellow car makes me a city employee.
If you have a green one, you get to go on TV like me.
I did not.
So work on green next time.
Okay. Again, I was concerned, and I guess my last question is, when we hit that trigger point, who calls the wall dam? Is that Hammond, you or is that Hammond?
Hammond already knew about it, so it's based on the conditions that we were dealing with. So at that point, we were at 5, it was at 16 point whatever. So based on the condition that it was cresting, they didn't have to do that. But they knew about it, and they had the sandbags ready, because they had already closed down Kennedy at that point.
But they make the call is what
they make
ultimately,
the call.
They ultimately make the call. Everyone knows what Bill talked about before is our plan is there, and they have all signed off on the plan. So similar to what we said about Northcutt, if we call them and say, we suggest that, and they don't do it, well then that's on them. So ultimately everyone, we talked about it, we had an afternoon meeting, Bill was there, a fiery, interesting one about a debrief of what was going on, and we all work together. There's no cities. We try to help each other because no one wants that to happen to anybody along the system.
Well, I know. I was trying to figure out who calls the ball, who actually makes the commitment. Is the city.
Yeah, they're notified that has reached a stage, a level, and then they do the work.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Clicking.
John Beckman, Catalystico Consulting, 243 Detroit Street, Hammond. I want to express my appreciation to Dan Repe that he's already talking with Craig Zanstra from the parks for another wetland, 90 acres thereabouts. And he's agreed to take another parcel of 80 acres and talk with Greg Zanstra and see if that could be another wetland project. Because some of you may not be aware of this, but when Hart died in his ditch, and then the Dutch finished it, they drained a 22,000 acre lake. Well, you knew that?
We live on a swamp.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we need to try to...
Been doing this for a while, too, Bill. You know that.
You know what?
Been doing this for a while.
Well, I'm impressed you knew the acreage.
I didn't know the acreage. I know we live on a swamp.
So, the 15 gallons of water, we need to reduce down to 13 gallons of water since we only have a 10-gallon bucket. So, many more wetlands will be helpful in that regard. So I just came here to express my appreciation to see you're moving forward on wetland projects. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Hello, my name is Adrian Askew. I'm a sophomore at Steel City Academy, 2650 West 35th Avenue in Gary, Indiana. And I am here to represent the 280 students at my school, as well as the 30 of us that you see here today. We are here with one simple request for the Calumet River Basin Development Commission. We are asking you to protect our school and our environment by not leasing land to Maya Energy. I want to share with you all what this land means to us. Our school is on 18 acres of beautiful land that provides a natural environment that we can learn from. I can look out of my window and see blue skies, cornfields, and trees that grow up to 20 feet in the air. If you walk around our school on the trails, our paths surrounding us, you will likely run into a deer or a beaver or other animals living in their natural habitats. We can listen to the geese that live across the street from us on that same lot of land that will become a dump if you lease it to Maya Energy. We know that our school is safe from flooding because the surrounding land will soak up excess water to help The trees grow tall and provide land for the geese. But if my energy builds next door, the trash piles will be taller than the trees. The animals will be pushed from their land. Toxins and pollutants will hurt our environment and our bodies. The land surrounding our school gives us beauty, peace, and inspiration. The land is our backyard, our playground, and we don't want hundreds of trucks, the noise, or the smell of trash. We are here to ask you to choose our education and our health over this lease. Our education is more important than a waste management facility. Everyone here embodies five core values of Steel City Academy. Purpose. This is our purpose for you guys to see us fighting for our education. Grit. We know this won't be an easy fight, but we're willing to put in the work to make it happen. Team. We're here, students, parents, community members, all as one united front. Joy. Our joy comes from knowing that we're going to be successful and knowing that we'll be leaving a safe environment for those that follow in our footsteps. And last but most definitely not least, power. Our power is represented in us being able to use our voices and advocate for ourselves. Once again, I am here to represent all of the faces you see tonight, and we're asking you all to help us protect our most valuable resource, us kids. Thank you.
Thank you. Well done. Yes, miss.
I am also a student from Steel City Academy. My name is Brandon Marshall. I am here to represent the Steel City Academy family. And at my school, we say we are Steel City Strong. And that's because we love our home, Gary. I know that many people don't realize how amazing Gary is, but we are proud to call that our home. Our teachers have taught us that we are the future change makers of the city. It's our job to advocate for justice in Gary, and that's what I'm here to do today. It is my understanding that the Calumet River Basin Development Corporation exists to protect Northwest Indiana from flooding. Food protection. I hear the word protection. The students of Steel City Academy are asking that you protect our school by not taking away land that is meant to protect from flooding. The land currently soaks up excess water that comes in on heavy rains. We are asking you to consider the risk of heavy rains with a dump nearby. Toxins from the waste would flood into our school, which would affect our health, our students, their learning. This is an environmental injustice that is unfair to Gary and all of the students that attend Steel City Academy. We are asking you to protect our right to learn in a healthy environment without the risk, in a healthy environment without being exposed to toxins. No one wants to smell garbage throughout the learning day. We want to graduate healthy, walk across the stage healthy, smiling, not in an emergency room trying to get off a cancer. Protect my home, Gary, by not allowing anyone to build something that doesn't improve the way the world sees us. Not giving a lease to Mari and G is justice for Gary. Please choose justice. Choose to protect the students of Steel City Academy. Again, I am just asking you to think on it. Do not give Mari and G this lease. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, miss.
Good evening. We bring the snap, so that's at Steel City. We give love to anybody, and we just give them a little snap. So that's kind of where it's coming from. So my name is Katie Curley, and I am one of the co-founders, and now have the honor of being the principal of these brilliant children that stood before you this evening. And we stand before you, and I represent 280 students, families, and our community of Glen Park. In requesting that we reconsider the license of agreement that is entering in with Maya Energy as they plan to build a solid waste processing facility 96.4 feet away from our school. Steel City, as we've mentioned, sits on 18 acres of land, and we represent the only junior high and high school option for our city of Gary south of 25th Avenue. The school's property backs up to the Little Calumet River Trail, as you know, and I will tell you, we honor it, we love it, how we use it for learning every single week. So you come and visit us, you will see our students out, our physical education classes, walking the trails. You will see our Year Zero Climate Change and Environmental Justice Group studying our wildlife. You will see our partnership with the Gary Nature Project, setting up community hikes and environmental exploration. And we sit here before you today and really encourage you to decide in accordance with the great public outcry that we've since we have become aware of this, that has come from our school community and our community of Glen Park. We've hosted a community meeting that brought in over 120 people. We sat in silent protest at the city council meeting last week with 120 strong of our young people. And so now we stand before you tonight and consider your role in supporting us. As we learned, it's been a huge learning for me tonight, and so thank you so much for your presentation. As we think about Gary, to quote, Gary is a sponge. And so Maya Energy's facility would be located immediately adjacent to a floodplain. And as we can see in the past month's flooding alone, the ground has been only inches from water level. Right next door, we saw several pictures tonight in the presentation, right next to our school. And as we think about the increased severity and frequency of these so-called 100-year floods, we know that 35th Avenue is comprised as a safe location, is compromised as a safe location, and I think we should all reconsider the sustainability and security of building a facility on that property. Finally, we've mentioned that the traffic along 35th Avenue would be increased by up to 600 trucks per day, creating an unsafe situation for students, families, parents departing and arriving Steel City, and wreaking potential havoc on a narrow road built not for the concentration of that heavy traffic. So as we, you heard from Adrian, one of our core values is this idea of power and using our voice to seek and actions to make the world a better place. Our students have continued to embody that over the last few weeks. And Steel City Academy and our family urge the commission to make the right decision, reconsider the lease agreement, and not allow them to build in our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Good evening. My name is Brandon Atkins. I stand up here with my daughter, Leilani. She's a freshman at Steel City Academy, and I'm a very active parent with Steel City Academy. I do Gear and Flame Week with them, which is where they have me come in and I teach some of my specialties to the students. I give them a little perspective on running a business and what to do in different situations. My biggest concern for Maya being across the street from my daughter's school and the fact that my son will be there next year, she was diagnosed with asthma at the age of 3 months. I just 8 years ago got her off of a nebulizer every 4 to 6 hours, every day. I don't want to put her back on a nebulizer. I do not want my child to be sick. And Maya poses a very big health threat with them 24,000 pounds of trash a day that they're supposed to be recycling or whatever they claim that they're doing. I'll try to look up their website. They have shut it down, so we can't see what they're truly about. I've asked them personally, and there's no recourse to what they're actually implementing that they're claiming that they're wanting to do. I don't feel that, as a parent, that is something that's safe health-wise, with that many trucks running back and forth through the school, by the school, during the time the kids are in school. How can they function? How can they listen to the teachers? How can they hear? They're wanting to run the facility the entire time our kids are in school. I asked him, would he like a facility like that across the street from his children's school? I don't want it across the street from my child's school. My daughter is above a 3-point GPA. I want her to stay that way. She can't stay that if she's missing school because she's sick, because Maya wants to build a dump, literally a dump, not even 100 feet across the street from the school. I don't want to smell the dump when I come up there to do whatever it is I'm doing that day. It's not safe. It's not healthy for any of them, not just the kids, but we have these wonderful leaders that are teaching our children every day. They care about our kids, they care about our community. It will completely kill off our community, and I really don't want to see that happen. I say, can we send them back to where they came from? Please,
amen. Thank you, ma'am. Thank you. Yes, sir.
I'm meeting, and you don't. John Melissa, 8049 Jefferson.
Nice to see you again, John.
Well, I've been staying away since the last meeting. But nothing like a good flood to get you out and looking at
you. You know, I really don't want to see you anymore.
A couple of things. There's a long list of things that I saw that should be addressed, but I'm just going to hit a couple of them. And what is we spent a lot of money to make the Northcott Bridge a siphon bridge. And we close it off. How come? How come?
That's easy.
The bridge, you know, sides are higher than the river, they're higher than the levee, the thing stayed high and dry, and we blocked it off. Wow.
I will try to address it, but the siphon bridge was never a part of the project. Was it approved as an amendment to the project because of, I don't remember exactly what the reasons or rationale were when they put it in between the former engineer here and the engineer at Hammond. And because of that, we still have to put a closure there. Because if it does fail, because it wasn't built to how it was supposed to be built to the specifications, then we have a situation where people are affected and they shouldn't be. I understand the expense, but I will tell you that I believe both communities were made aware of the fact that that siphon bridge wouldn't be considered a part of the project.
Okay.
Not here to That's, defend it
the
or
money
not.
Is water over to Dan. But the thing is,
a pun intended.
It's going to be more intended than you think, because when I looked at that river, you know, at the day of the flood, there were trees on the east side of the bridge, and there was a 1 foot difference between the east side of the bridge water and the west side. Now, in my vocabulary and what I've learned in college, that's a dam. You've got a dam. You've built a dam on the river, and it's not in that model. And that's why the water was a little lower when you got on the other side of Northcott. Actually, I like it because I'm on that side.
It's a control structure without being a control structure.
It's doing the job that the Corps of Engineers control structure was supposed to do. But it's not designed to do that. Designed to be a bridge, not a dam. Okay, let's go to the next issue. This was 2008. What we saw 3 weeks ago was not 2008. It wasn't near the water in 2008. And I'll tell you why. Because when you look at these photos, you see all this water. All this water came from the river. You know, so the river was actually lower. You know, than what we think it was in 2008, because all that water went to Munster. Where I was at, 200 feet west of Canyon Avenue Bridge, there was a 10-foot wide, 10-foot deep hole in the levee. And it was letting all this water into Munster. You know, I don't know what the actual height was on, Dan, you can tell me, this year versus 2008.
At that station over on Holman, it was a 1 foot difference between 2008 and 2018.
1 foot which way?
1 foot lower.
Into this year?
This year, compared to, according to that gauge.
The one on Holman, you got to remember, is downstream of Northcott.
We don't have another gauge. We don't have another gauge to put it up against. That's why we started adding more gauges so we can get a better idea.
Yeah, I was out there when the USGS was starting to put in a gauge at Northcott Bridge. Unfortunately, he said he's going to put it on the west side. It needs to be on the east side where the water's deeper.
And he put it on the east side.
Good, thank you. That didn't come from me, did it?
Well, he called me and asked me what side I wanted to put it on, and I said, we want to put it on the east side because of that. So maybe we're thinking alike.
Good, good. Well, anyway, like I say, this was not 2008.
and we're going to see something far worse than 2008, so we better be prepared. And like I say, I've got many other issues.
John, why don't you pass those issues to Dan electronically?
I will.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Yes, sir.
Hello, I'm Steve Trushin. I own Gary Bridge and Iron Company. I own the property that's adjacent to this Meyer Energy proposal. I'm opposed to it. We have a family business. We've been in business there for 77 years. There are other businesses in addition to the school. I think I'm more concerned about the school than I am the rest of them. But Berkheimer is there, the Northwest Indiana Food Bank. There's a Burger King, a McDonald's, a Village Shopping Center. This is a real poor place for this. The street cannot, this construction of that street cannot handle this kind of traffic. The information that was given to the city of Gary when they rezoned this or gave a zoning variance was that there was going to be 7 trucks a day. 7 trucks a day can't haul 2,400 tons of garbage. And that's in and out. So there's about 600 tons, 600 trucks a day going to try to use the corner here at 35th and Grant and go down Grant Street. There's a lot of reasons why not. You folks are interested in water, so I'm going to tell you about the water. These folks want to pave 35 acres. The land that you're talking about is about 6 inches above 35th Avenue. There is a ditch that is on the south side of 35th Avenue. During this last rain event, the ditch was about 6 inches below the street. That ditch is blocked from getting into the Little Calumet River because there is a control structure at 35th and Chase. And when the river's up, there's no water that can flow out of there. From an engineering standpoint, there is a requirement to meet IDEM Rule 5 for stormwater detention. It would take about seven acre feet to handle the detention for the 35 acres. There is no discharge. When the ditch is full, where's the water gonna go? Water's gonna go right across the street into this school. It's just a terrible, terrible idea. And I'm sure when you folks were presented with some of the facts when you did this license agreement, you weren't presented with all the facts. And the city of Gary was not presented with all the facts when they approved the zoning. There was advertisements in the paper by Maya of 3,500 to 3,600 Chase Street. That isn't where this is. I mean, all the information that has been let out about this project, which is very limited, was for the wrong address. They said, well, the school wasn't there before, but the buildings were there. Maya said, well, the school wasn't there, but the buildings belonged to the ARC, which previously was the Lake County Association of Retarded. The buildings are in good shape. They were protected by the dike. I mean, this almost all flooded back in the 81 and 82 and 89 and stuff before this happened. The area outside of the dike is very prone to flooding. All the water from that area needs to be pumped over the top of the dike to get in there. So if there's some kind of problem with the pumps, or this is going to all flood. So will the area that you're trying to rent, to lease it. So I'm encouraging you to reconsider that license agreement. The city of Gary doesn't need this, the residents don't need it, and for sure the students at Steel City Academy don't.
Thank you, sir. Okay, anybody else like to speak? Going once, going twice, going back to the board. All right, folks, let's do the thing. Mr. Castellanos.
Well, first of all, I'd just like to compliment the young people from the city of Gary on the fine presentation they made. I'm really impressed with the way that you made your presentation. Very nice. Mm-hmm. And also was very impressed with the presentation made by the Army Corps of Engineers. I had no idea about that being designed, and I'd like to know if you would be available to come on our radio program once a month on WLTH, which airs on the second Monday of every month, and we cover Michigan City, LaPorte goes up to South Chicago, the area, so I'd like to offer you the opportunity to come on board with us and explain that to the city of Gary and People Lake Station. Thank you.
Mr. Nimitz.
Being new to the commission, I just want to say that I'm impressed with the progress that has occurred since 2008. Since our last commission meeting, we had a major precipitation event compounded by frozen ground and lots of snow. During this meeting in 2008, we would have had residents from many more communities wanting to learn about the actions that occurred. And so I just want to say thank you for this opportunity to learn today, but also I have been very impressed with the progress. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Mr. Broadnax.
Also, again, I'm impressed with the students who came out. I really appreciate your passion. Just being good representatives of your school and the city of Gary, which is where I'm from as well.
Mr. Gazdecki.
Here, I'd also like to echo those statements. I think you guys did an outstanding job, both the students and the community leaders that came out and shared your thoughts. Appreciate that.
Kudos. But, also need to give a attaboy to all the communities and Mr. Repay for all the extra effort put forth as far as making sure the plan that was put into place prevented something that happened in 2008. And welcome to the community. It's a civics lesson. So there's two sides to that coin. Keep that in mind as things move forward.
There's some 1:30 a.m.s on the board.
Mr. Wyszlinski.
Again, welcome all students. Good job. And community, Dan, all our partners stepped up to the plate. Saw firsthand in Griffith when you don't maintain something, how things can go awry. And the plan was in place and it got done. And hopefully we can continue to learn as we go forward to make it even better. That's it.
Mr. Whitaker.
Well, I certainly want to say, welcome everyone again back to our Little Calumet River Basin Development Commission meeting. It's good to see new faces, students in particular as well. I am the City of Gary representative for the Little Cal, and it's encouraging to see you guys come out. One thing which is typical, unfortunately, is oftentimes when we vote, we go home instead of staying involved, as Mr. Baker just mentioned about the civics lesson and the opportunity to just be exposed to what's actually going on in your region, in your backyard, and in your community. You all play a pivotal role in making sure that happens. And I'm a Gary native, of course, and horseman granted, mechanical engineer from Purdue, and so it's a litany of things that you certainly can do and have the ability to actually pursue and do, not limited to political science and civic engagement. And so certainly want to continue to encourage you to continue to stay involved. I kind of lit up this afternoon when I saw Carol Carlson, a long time friend, and I did a lot of parent advocacy work over the years, school-related parent advocacy work, and she covered a lot of those stories over the years. And so it was very encouraging seeing you guys out and seeing an old familiar face with Ms. Carlson to provide coverage for you guys and to motivate you guys and inspire you guys to continue to stay involved. We have a task here. We have a long way to go. with how we continue to do business in terms of our representation as commissioners. I think this February flood event this year was a good test for us, not just as a commission, but as a region, to really see where we are with practicing what we preach on a month-to-month basis, and whether or not we could literally deploy the plan of action as planned. I know, Dan, we talked about our those little booklets, and maybe you can mention that those are available or will be available via website, or maybe you'll have some. But I would like for some of those statements and feedback was, what's designed to flood, what isn't designed to flood, what requires certain wall elevations and sandbags and eliminations. And but this information is not limited to us as commissioners. This information is as well available to you as residents, whether you're a resident or whether you're a renter. You're in the watershed, as they mentioned, a lot of the cities, Highland, Munster, Gary, Griffith, Maryville, Hobart. So we pay into the watershed. Your parents pay into the watershed via taxes. And so you need to be privy to what's going on financially and what that responsibility essentially entails, and what that means for us as representatives for Little Calumet River Basin Development Commission. And so I sort of strongly encourage you to make sure that you get whatever those booklets are, or go onto the website and look at that information. I want to continue to encourage students, continue with your advocacy work that you're doing. You are pioneering a great need across the world, really, that is necessary for us as a future. When you pay into our Social Security. So we want you to be very strong leaders so that we can have something to depend upon. And I want to encourage you guys to continue to do what you're doing. Sometimes you fight a cause and you get results that you intended, and sometimes you fight a cause and you may not get results that you intended and desire to see. But you only win if you don't fight. You only lose if you don't fight. Every time that you get involved, you win, no matter what the outcome is. And so I want to encourage you to continue to pursue what it is that you are intending to pursue, whether it's this matter or whether there are other matters in the future. Stay involved, and when you stay involved, you get information, and you're more privy to information. And so you have a better opportunity to do with the information versus at a certain stage in time. So I certainly want to also thank the teachers of the students and the parents and the administration for their involvement with the kids. One of the things you're taught in doing a lot of parent advocacy work, I had the opportunity to work with a lot of administrators in schools and school board. But one of the things that you taught when you're pursuing education is that when you make change, you try to make it as far away from the children as possible. And hopefully this can materialize into something very positive long term. Just your involvement alone, that will materialize into something positive for your futures. But the overall development of this and the overall pursuit and outcome of this, prayerfully and hopefully, it becomes something very positive, a very positive outcome for everyone. That's all.
Amen. Thank you.
Mr. Ware.
I guess I just echo LaVon's comments and most of the other board here. To the students who came here to the microphone, that's not an easy task to do. Keep up that advocacy, like LaVon said. whether it's this issue or others, the youth of our communities, your community and others, are the drivers of change and discussion. So continue to stay involved. Thank you for your comments. To Dan and the other entities, during the recent flooding event, near flooding event, thankfully, while nothing is ever perfect, it's always a work in progress, and status quo should never just be good enough. And I thank Dan and the entities and the communication. I was able to be out there a day or so, spend some time on my own, ran into Dan and others within the communities, and the communication within the different communities was outstanding. So thanks to Dan and all those involved.
All right, folks, next meeting is going to be April 11th. Entertain a motion to adjourn.
So, second.
All right, thanks, folks. Appreciate the time. Be safe going home.